This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Today on our Bloggers Roundtable, we're taking a close look at urban education and the race for the White House. A new report shows Detroit's high schools have the lowest graduation rate of all major U.S. cities. And a key Clinton advisor leaves after questions about whether his consulting business conflicted with Senator Clinton's political goals. Joining me now for our roundtable is Eric Brown, blogger for the Detroit News' political and government blog, also the media assassin Harry Allen, who blogs at harryallen.info, and Chris Rabb, founder of AfroNetizen.com. Hi, folks.
Hi, Farai.
Hello.
So earlier in the show, I spoke with economist and Bennett College president Julianne Malveaux about the latest round of bad economic news, 80,000 jobs slashed last month overall. Eric, let me start with you. You're in Detroit. Michigan's economy has been hit hard over the last several years. As a journalist and a resident of the city, what are you hearing from folks about the choices they're having to make on the day-to-day about everything from job hunting to even possibly relocating?
Well, you hear a lot about relocating, not just the Detroit area, but all of Michigan as a whole. There are just not many opportunities being available for people. You hear about the governor and other elected officials talk about the jobs in the computer field and all of that, but if you do not have the educated workforce to apply for those jobs, you're preaching to the choir, and people get disenchanted, and you also have people that stop looking for jobs. That adds to the unemployment rate, which in essence adds to the crime rate, which in essence adds to the apathy, and it's just a ongoing effect that is making people do things that they would not normally do. And even with crime, some of the crime that takes place in the Detroit, I just find baffling. Stealing copper and pieces of metal from houses and churches just to make ends meet, that's amazing to me that people have to resort to those type of things to get by.
Yeah, that's a story that's been going around about people ransacking empty buildings and just ripping out all of the copper tubing.
Correct.
And that is that's a sad sign. Let me approach this from a couple different angles. Chris, you're an entrepreneur. As a businessman, what are you looking for in this economy in terms of the choices you make? And when you talk to other people who are entrepreneurs, what kind of calculations are people making?
Well, there are different classes of entrepreneurs. There are a lot of folks who become entrepreneurs out of necessity, and there are those, probably a much smaller group, who are entrepreneurs out of opportunity. And those out of necessity are those folks who've been laid off, who are retired, who are semi-retired, or folks who can no longer deal with the rat race and feel that they need to take it out and do their own thing. However, we have a culture in this country about rugged individualism and entrepreneurship, and a lot of that is propaganda, when in fact, regardless of how smart you may be, how much education you have, what your work ethic is, there's not a direct correlation between those things and success in entrepreneurship. And in this period, it makes it even more difficult, and there's not good public policy. There's not strong advocacy by people who really don't quite know enough about American entrepreneurship and what works and what doesn't in order to lead people into more fruitful enterprises. And that's something that actually Van Jones of Green for All is talking about with regard to creating green pathways out of poverty. So it's less so for those folks who are in corporate America, but really talking about creating jobs, creating entrepreneurial opportunity that can link local economies and local environments together by creating a workforce that is prepared to do work that is much needed by numerous industries in and around urban centers.
Harry, when you think about New York, your city, New York is such an amazing amalgam of people from all walks of life, including financially. And so with Wall Street taking a hit now, and with, as Dr. Malveaux mentioned, the bonus money that Wall Street tycoons get having a ripple effect on, how much they employ other people, for example, is how's New York hanging in all of this?
I think it's hanging much the way many other large metropolises with large non-white populations are, in that you have an increasing division. You have astounding amounts of wealth. I was listening to one commentator today talking about the apartments inhabited by people who make $40,000 a year, but those apartments cost $39,000 a year, which means that that money is coming from families that can afford to put their, you know, children who have new jobs in advertising or copywriting, who put those kids up, you know, and
right.
take care of them. Yet at the same time, you know, one of the, we're talking about this recession, Black America's employment or unemployment figures are typically at recession levels for whites. Average Black unemployment is typically at what recession level unemployment is for whites on an ongoing basis. And for Black teenagers, and I think this ties directly to another story you're talking about here, the lack of education or dropout rates, that unemployment rate as of January 2008, according to Bureau of Labor Statistics, is at 35.7%, which is astronomical, almost unbelievable and unfathomable. So what we're seeing is really the potential of some kind of level of future social chaos, actually, if this issue isn't dealt with in a drastic way.
Well, I mean, you know, we've dealt with chaos before, whether it's, you know, L.A. on fire, various and sundry other events, which may have centered around one incident like the Rodney King verdict, but really spoke to a larger level of
social unrest and discontent.
Exactly. Do you think that this, if not managed, that this economic environment could produce that kind of bitterness?
I think that we're seeing huge levels of disarray and anger in this country. I think we have an administration that shows an unusual ability to not listen to the populace, and we have threads of problematic threads winding their way all throughout the economy, everything from a war that is costing $12.5 billion a month to this housing crisis, which is just nagging like a bad cold and just won't go away, to these figures.
Now, I want to turn to you, Eric, for the piece of this which has to do with education. And your city has been going through it, you know, the mayor, the economy, now this new report coming out of a group called America's Promise Alliance. Former Secretary of State Colin Powell is one of the founding chairs of that. But out of America's 50 largest cities, they say Detroit has the lowest high school graduation rate. You have written about this report. Give us a brief update on it and why the rates are so low.
What's embarrassing, first and foremost, I was born and raised in Detroit. I'm a product of the public school system there. And to read the numbers that I read on April Fool's Day, which turns out to not be April Fool's joke, I was totally embarrassed. But a lot of it, my god sister, she's a teacher in the public school system, a lot of it is attributed to the lack of parental involvement. When you have kids that are in an environment where not only do we have the most pathetic dropout rate in the country, but we have also one of the most pathetic literacy rates in the country.
Well, let me just say here that we're talking about, you know, basically three quarters of the students dropping out over time.
Correct, but it seems to me, and based on talking to my counselor, there's like a trickle down effect from the parents or lack of parent involvement. She had a teachers conference last week, and of the 45 students in her classroom, only five parents showed up. She also has, in her immediate classroom, 23 students. Only two of those students live in a two-parent household. So it starts at home, lack of parental involvement, and people emulate what they see. If you're not seeing your parents do anything to better themselves, by the time you get to high school, because she's an elementary school teacher, by the time they get to high school, education is not something that they value. And that's why the numbers are what they are.
And when you... It's not as if Detroit is alone, although it is at the bottom of the heap, according to this study. Philadelphia was within the 20 lowest graduation
right.
rates. New York City came in at number 8, less than half of you know, the students graduating. Chris, when you think about this, you offered us a strategic take on the jobs issue and brought out some of the new programs that are coming up to try to connect urban communities to jobs in sectors like the environment. But what do you think could really reshape this?
I think a comprehensive
domestic policy on the federal level.
Well, you're laughing because you think it's impossible, or what is?
Well, I'm trying not to sound partisan, but you know, I think the reality is, if this were any other community, it would have been handled. You're talking about an essentially disposable generation of Americans, and the reason they're disposable is because they're black, and that's a sin. If you have this level of poverty, this level of crime, illiteracy, it's just, who thinks that you can just build more gated communities to keep away from, quote unquote, these people? The reality is, we're Americans, and we need to figure out a way to understand that a rising tide lifts all boats. And, you know, I'm in Philadelphia. The poverty rate here is significant. It's 45% black. Less than half of high school students graduate. But we have to understand that crime relates to poverty, relates to education, relates to home stability. And I personally believe that if you have a hardworking single parent, you can provide the type of leadership and love and support and nurturing that a two-parent household. And having grown up with a lot of folks who came from two-parent households, I saw great dysfunction in them. So I don't think that's a silver bullet, not to suggest others saying otherwise. But I think it's really important to recognize that until we see this as symptomatic of structural inequality, we're just kind of pushing around phenomenon without really understanding the things that promote this on a societal level, and that's a real problem.
You bring up a good point, but let me interject something right quick. Two of the top six cities are predominantly white cities, Indianapolis and Minneapolis, Minnesota. So it's not, I mean, true, I agree with you, Chris, it's not a issue affecting just the black populace, but it appears from this report it's affecting black, white, brown, and yellow, not just black. I mean, even though some of the major cities in the top 10 are predominantly black, but there are cities in the top 20 that are not predominantly black.
Well, you know, we don't like to talk about it, but there are poor white people. You know, and most people who are on welfare are, in fact, white. We have an issue talking about class and poverty in this country, and it's one of the reasons I suspect John Edwards got out so early is because people didn't want to hear that. But the reality is, it's not just race, it's class. All these things are interlaced. You can't talk about any of these things without talking about the other. And we're honestly not at a point, although I think Barack Obama has done a decent job of touching on these issues, it's not something that corporate media talks about. If it wasn't for NPR and alternative media, this stuff wouldn't be talked about in any kind of substantive manner. And until we do, you know, it's just going to be talk.
Well, let me jump in because I wanted to touch briefly on the presidential race, and we only have a little bit of time. But we sort of segued into race and politics. And obviously, last week we had the 40th anniversary of the death of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. John McCain spoke from the Lorraine Hotel where King was gunned down, and his speech mentioned that he at one point didn't support a federal holiday honoring King when McCain was a congressman in 1983.
We can be slow as well to give greatness its due. A mistake I myself made long ago. I myself made long ago when I voted against a federal holiday in memory of Dr. King. I was wrong. I was wrong.
We all make mistakes.
So you hear some people in the crowd booing him, and another one who said we all make mistakes, you know, kind of saying it's all right. Harry, you worked with Public Enemy, seminal hip-hop group, and their song By the Time I Get to Arizona made reference to the state's opposition to a King holiday. Now you have Senator McCain, who opposed the federal and state holiday, eventually came around to support it. Is something like this, is a moment like this a moment where people should say, well, okay, he has grown, and whatever issues he had around this, around race, are in the past, or is this a red flag? What do you think?
Well, By the Time I Get to Arizona was about the King holiday, And I think what people should, I think McCain's statement sounds like something from the future. If you change certain nouns around, maybe he's talking about the Iraq War, that he was wrong about King's Holiday, and maybe he's going to be wrong about what he's saying now. I think what we should do, instead of saying, well, you know, he could have been wrong, was look at what he said, look at the time, look at what other people were doing, and judge his thought process. And I have to say something right here, and I'm going to be blogging about this very shortly, and I want to be, like, on NPR, maybe the, I don't know if I'm the first person to address this. I would like the media to seriously deal with the question of whether John McCain suffers from post-traumatic stress syndrome. He was tortured very heavily while he was a captive, and he has a reputation for going off on the handle, for bugging out and getting very angry very fast, and people talk about this a lot. And this issue can also affect his judgment. So aside from giving him the slip, which we should not, because that was a really serious issue for him to say, well, I was wrong. Why were you wrong? What is
right.
the problem with
this? That's absolutely
judgment?
Right.
Well, gentlemen, you know what? I hate to say it, but this is going to bring us to the end of this conversation. But certainly what you bring up is something that it's going to become a greater issue of conversation. And I'm glad that we got the beginning of your take here. We're going to make sure and check out your blog. And, of course, we'll have you guys on again real soon. Thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Farai.
We've been speaking with the media assassin, Harry Allen, who blogs at harryallen.info, Chris Rabb, founder of afronetizen.com, and Eric Brown, blogger for the Detroit News' political and government blog.